Welcome to KHD Bible Study. My name is Emmanuel. I'm a teacher and an elder at Kehilath Haderach Messianic Synagogue in New York City. I lead a detailed study of the Holy Scriptures from a Messianic Jewish perspective, chapter by chapter, adding historical context to the events, people, and places. Each week, passionate people gather to read the Scriptures, discuss the significance, and ask questions that help to bring out a deeper understanding of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. We hope you will join us as we explore and read the book of Isaiah. As we mentioned in the opening, tonight is the third part of Isaiah. We will be looking at Isaiah chapters 7 through 12. As I mentioned also, these are some of the most famous scriptures for both Judaism and Christianity, some for different reasons. One of the topics that we will look at is the whole discussion of Emmanuel. Not me, and not even the name used in the scriptures, because as you'll learn, that's not exactly the name that is written in the scriptures. There are likely dozens of songs and stories about the name Emmanuel. Maybe even hundreds if we count all the various languages, because I've heard some in other languages. The name Emmanuel is actually a translation of Immanuel. The name was given as a sign, but it is much more than a sign. It's actually a covenant promise. It's a very long-living covenant promise. Its roots actually go back to Abraham and Moses, and I hope I can explain that successfully to you tonight. It is interconnected directly with Adonai. And Isaiah, Adonai put the promise into the form of a name. So its origin and its roots do not start as a name, but in Isaiah, it crystallizes as a name, and it becomes a kind of signet seal that cannot be broken. Let's start with Genesis. In Genesis, Jacob receives a promise in a dream. Genesis 28:15, for those who are taking notes. And here, Adonai makes a declarative statement. He says, I am. He says, behold, I am with you and will keep you and will bring you back. Anachnu Imak. That phrase appears numerous times throughout the scriptures, but he's usually speaking in his own voice. He's saying, I am with you. That evolves. In Exodus, when Adonai is interacting face to face with Moses, he gives the promise again several times. But in this particular case, notice how Hashem is actually promising a direct projection from himself. He now speaks of his presence. And that word presence that we see in our English translations is actually not presence the way we think of presence, like being near someone. It's actually his face. So the word presence, where you see the word presence in scripture in the Torah, it is usually panim, or faces, plural. So we often, sometimes you'll see translations and they'll turn the word presence into countenance, or the word face into countenance. And all of you should remember the prayer that we say at the end of services. He is saying, his face will be upon you. Now we know for a fact that we can't make idols or statues of anything. So when he is saying his face, it means something greater. We have to go beyond the word, the literal word of his face. He's not giving us his face in a very real sense, but he is giving us his face in a very real sense. It sounds contradicting. I know. Exodus 33:14, my panim will go with you and I will give you rest. So now he's gone forward from I will be with you as a direct promise to now saying my face will go with you and I will give you rest. Keep those words in mind. In Leviticus, he's now saying not only will his face be with men, but he will set his tabernacle with men. And tabernacle means his resting place. And it also means he will live among men. So in Leviticus 26, 11 through 12, he says, I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul will not abhor you. In other words, he won't be detested by being with men because men are sinful and he is not. And continuing with the verse, he says, I will walk among you and will be your God, and you will be my people. Now, I have read that verse many, many times over many decades. I mean, literally, I've read that verse many, many times. In the context of Isaiah, in the context of the word Immanuel, I begin to understand that what he is saying is literally true. He's saying, I will set my face, my panim, my tabernacle among you in the middle of men, and I will walk among you. Now let's take that apart. We know that the Mishkan is made up of many pieces. The Mishkan is what we call the tabernacle. While the Mishkan needs to be disassembled and reassembled, it cannot walk among the people. Let that sink in for a moment. So he said, I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul will not abhor you. I will walk among you. I will be your God, and you will be my people. A tabernacle, a mishkan, can't walk. It has to be disassembled, carried to a new location, and reassembled. A temple cannot walk. It's simply stationary. It stays right where it is. What Adonai is saying through his prophets is that he will send his face among men and will walk among them. And so he came as a man. He came as a man, and he was sent by Adonai from Adonai. You see, those words were not just an idle promise. They go all the way back to the first books of the Torah. This was not an idle promise or metaphor, but a revelation to those who could see and understand it. And along the way, many people did. If you listen and read carefully, these are the very same words Yeshua used to describe himself. He never once said he was God. The Brit Hadashah, or the New Testament, for those who don't recognize the term, says he tabernacled. He came from the Father. He was with the Father. If you have seen me, he said, you have seen the Father. The Father is greater than I. In fact, only one man received the command from the Father to lay down his life and to pick it up again. Yeshua said that was a commandment of his Father. No one takes it away from me, but I lay it down on my own. I have the authority to lay it down, and I have the authority to take it up again. This command I received from the Father. That's John 10, verse 18, for those of you who are keeping notes. So these chapters of Isaiah lay out a, I'm going to say it, I know it sounds funny, but it's a GPS roadmap for people who were immersed in the Torah to see what Adonai was going to do in the days before the destruction of Judea by the Romans. Now, here's the amazing part. The Torah scholars of the day, of Yeshua's day, did not see the subtleties of the Torah. And I asked myself why. Because they focused on the books as regulatory documents, as books of law. And what did Yeshua argue with them about mostly? That they did not recognize the other parts, the weightier parts of the Torah. You see, they focused on do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. And they did not recognize that he said, I am going to walk among you. They couldn't see the promises written in plain sight. Because, as I've said, when I was studying, when I've studied the Torah over and over again, I've read the stories, I get right to the heart of the story. And almost every single time when I read them, until lately, I used to come in with a preconceived notion of what Noah's going to do, what Abraham's going to do, what Isaac is going to do. And so I was not paying attention to the words that he was saying because I was caught up in the details of the Torah. But if you step back from the details of the Torah and you step back from the regulations and you start focusing on this God in heaven, this creator who is talking through the Torah, you see these promises. I will send my tabernacle among you. I will send my face to be with you. I will set my face upon you. I will walk with you. So, how is that to be accomplished? Well, first of all, there were people in Yeshua's time who saw the signs, the apostles. And the scholars, the Torah scholars, said, how is it possible these fishermen, these low-class people, could pick up the subtle things in Torah? Because they weren't focused on the do's and don'ts, and they were listening for the voice of the Father. The women dropped everything and followed Yeshua and paid for his ministry. The monies came from them. The Pharisees, and I know we like to say, oh, the Pharisees were, yeah, but they were following him. From the moment he came on the scene, the Pharisees were with him. Every turn he took, they were following him. And even though many of them got into arguments and discussions with him, a lot of them became his followers after they saw the fulfillment of the scriptures in his life. A lot of the Pharisees. Who are the Pharisees today? We call them rabbinical Jews. One of those men, Nicodemus, came to Yeshua by night so that he could get more details because he wanted to understand. He was seeing the subtle things of the scriptures. Yeshua said at Hanukkah in the temple, and the scripture says that it was Hanukkah in the temple, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. That's John 27. How did the apostles, how did the women, how did the Pharisees, how did Nicodemus hear his voice if they had just met him? Where did they hear his voice? They heard him speaking in the Torah in the same way that we hear Adonai's voice when we read and listen to the book of Isaiah. It's not just Isaiah's voice that's talking. Just like in the Torah, it's not just Moses' voice who's talking. There are many verses in the Torah where Adonai promises to be with his people, to give them rest, to bring them back if they've fallen away. I just selected a few to show you how he was implanting his intentions, speaking through the Torah. So tonight, let's read Isaiah 7 through 12 against the foundation of the books of Moses, understanding that that our Father, our Creator, is speaking to us through Moses to us directly. It is his voice that we hear, and that's the voice that Yeshua speaks of as my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. All right? The word is the face. Now, when you say face, right? When you go to a mirror and you look in the mirror, are you seeing your exact face? No, you aren't. You're seeing a reflection of your face. So there are two faces that you're looking at, your actual face and your reflected face. And if you write words on the mirror in the way that you should read them, you'll quickly realize it's backwards in the mirror. The word is the face of the Father, the voice and the tabernacle of the Father. And he became a man and walked among his people exactly as he promised back in the Torah. And that is the context of Immanuel. That word, that phrase is used in Isaiah 7:14, Isaiah 8:8, and Isaiah 8:10. But in Isaiah 8:10, they translate it. But if you read it in Hebrew, it's the exact Immanuel. Now, for most of you, this might come as a surprise. That scripture, those scriptures were a dual-edged prophecy. One was fulfilled in Isaiah's time when he conceived through the prophetess who was a virgin. But that was a forerunner of the fulfillment of the greater event, which was to take place in the days of the Romans, when the face of the Father would become a man and walk among his brothers. Just to remind you, Matthew 1, 21 through 22, 23, she will give birth to a son, and you shall call his name Yeshua, for he will save his people from their sins. Now, all this took place to fulfill what was spoken by Adonai through the prophet, saying, "Behold, the virgin shall conceive and give birth to a son, and they shall call his name Immanuel, which means God with us." Yeshua's birth was a fulfillment of the promise that he made way back in the beginning of the Torah. I will be with you. I will give you rest. I will be with you. He said it numerous times to Joshua in particular. I will be with you. And this time he did come. He was with us. He walked among us. We heard his voice, and we still hear his voice today through the Torah. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started with the reading. I will read chapter 7. I've asked Jackie, Shamashi Jackie, to read chapter 8. I'd like if Erica, Shamashi Erica, could read chapter 9. I would like to have Rev Andy read chapter 10. And chapter 11, I would like Shamashi Malka, our wonderful producer. And then chapter 12, I'm going to leave open to a volunteer who feels inspired to read tonight. And we will get to that when we come to it. So let me start with chapter 7. Allow me a moment. I've got many screens open. All right, so Isaiah chapter 7. And we'll take questions at the end. Now, it came about in the days of Ahaz, which you'll see on your flyer, his name was shortened to Ahaz in the scriptures, son of Jotham, son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin of Aram and King Pelah, son of Remaliah of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail against it. When it was reported to the house of David, saying, "Aram is camped in Ephraim," his heart, as well as the heart of his people, shook like the trees of the forest shaking with the wind. Then Adonai said to Isaiah, "Go now and meet Ahaz, you and Shear Yasab, your son, at the end of the aqueduct from the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field, and say to him, 'Keep calm and be quiet. Do not fear, nor be faint-hearted because of these two stubs of smoldering firebrands, because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram, nor of the son of Remaliah, because Aram has plotted harm against you, along with Ephraim and the son of Remaliah, saying, "Let us go up against Judah, terrorize it, divide it for ourselves, and appoint Tabeel's son as king in the midst of it.' Thus says Adonai, 'It will not stand, nor will it occur. For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be broken and not be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son. If you do not trust, I'm sorry, if you do not trust, you will not stand.' Then Adonai spoke again to Ahaz, saying, Ask for a sign from Adonai your God, from the depths of Sheol, or the heights of heaven. In other words, something big. Swing for something really big, not just a simple ask, not a simple sign. Ask for something really big. Continuing, but Ahaz said, I won't ask. I won't test Adonai. Then he said, Hear now, house of David. Is it a small thing for you to weary men? Will you also weary my God? Therefore, Adonai himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin will conceive. When she is giving birth to a son, she will call his name Immanuel. He will be eating curds and honey by the time he knows to refuse evil and choose good. For before the boy knows to refuse evil and choose good, the land of the two kings you dread will be abandoned. Adonai will bring in you on your people and on your father's house such days as never come since the day of Ephraim separated from Judah, the king of Assyria. In that day, Adonai will whistle for the fly at the source of the Nile of Egypt, and for the bee in the land of Assyria. Then he will come, all of them, and will settle in the steep wadis and the cliffs of, I'm sorry, the clefts of the cliffs, and in all the thorn bushes, and in all the watering holes. And that day, Adonai will shave with a razor hired beyond the river, the king of Assyria, the head and the hair of the legs, and even clip off the beard. And that day it will be that a man will rear a calf and two sheep, and from the abundant milk they give, he will eat curds. For anyone left in the land will eat curds and honey. And that day it will be that every place where there were one, excuse me, it will be, excuse me, it will be in that. I'm sorry, I'm up. Love to be able to edit that out. And that day will be that every place where there are 1,000 vines worth 1,000 silver shekels will become briars and thorns. With arrows and bows, one will come there, since all the land will become briars and thorns. As for all the hills that were tilled with the hoe, you will not go there for fear of briars and thorns. Instead, it will be a grazing of oxen and roaming of sheep.
Chapter 8, Assyria will rise to Judah's neck. Then Adonai said to me, Take yourself a great tablet and write on it with a man's stylus. Maher Shalal Hashbaz. So I took for myself trustworthy witness Uriah the Kohen and Zechariah, son of Jebekiah. Then I went to the prophetess, and she conceived and bore a son. Then Adonai said to me, Call his name Mahershala Hasbaz, for before the child will have knowledge to cry, My father or my mother, the wealth of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria will be carried away before the king of Assyria. Then Adonai spoke to me further, saying, Because these people have refused the softly flowing water of Shiloh and rejoiced with Rezin and Remaiah's son, therefore, behold, Adonai is bringing on them the waters of the river, mighty and massive. Assyria's king, with all his glory, it will rise over all its channels and spill over all its banks. Then it will sweep through Judah, overflow as it passes through, reaching even the neck. So the spread of its wings will be the full breadth of your land, Emmanuel. Make an uproar, O peoples, but you will be broken in pieces. Give ear, all you of far countries, arm yourselves. Yet be shattered, arm yourselves, yet be shattered. Take counsel together. but it will amount to nothing. Speak a word, but it will not stand, for God is with us. But thus Adonai spoke to me with a strong hand, warning me that I should not walk in the way of these people, saying, do not say it's a conspiracy about everything that these people call conspiracy. You must not fear or tremble at what they fear. Adonai Sevaot, him will you sanctify, and let him be your fear, trembling at him. He will be a sanctuary, but a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Many among them will stumble, fall, and be broken, snared and caught. Bind up the testimony. Seal the instruction with my disciples. I will wait for Adonai, who is hiding his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look eagerly for him. Here I am with the children that Adonai has given me as signs and wonders in Israel. From Adonai Sevaot, who dwells on Mount Zion, when they say to you, consult the mediums, the necromancers who chirp and murder, shouldn't people seek their God? Should a people consult the dead on behalf of the living, to Torah and to the testimony? If they do not speak according to his word, it is because they have no light. They will pass this way that are hard pressed and hungry, and it will turn out that when they are hungry, they will become enraged and curse their king and their God, whether they turn their faces upward or look to the earth. Behold, distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish, and they will be driven into darkness. A great light in Galilee, but there is no gloom to her who was in anguish. As in time past, he treated lightly the land and Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the future, he will bring glory by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles.
Isaiah chapter 9. The people walk in the darkness will see a great light. Upon those dwelling the land of the shadow of death, light will shine. You will multiply the nation. You will increase the joy. They will rejoice before you like they joy in the harvest, as they revel when they divide spoil. For you, you will break the burdensome yoke and the rod of his shoulder, the war club of his oppressor, as in the day of the Midian. For every stomping boot, quacking and clog, rolling the blood will be for burning, fuel for the fire. Prince of Peace, for to us as a child is born, a son will given to us, and the government will be upon his shoulder. His name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, my Father of Eternity, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and shalom, there will be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it, uphold and through the justice and righteousness from now until forevermore. The zeal of Adonai Sevaot will accomplish this. Warning about defiance. Adonai sent a word to Jacob and fell upon Israel. All the people will know where Ephraim and in the inhabitants of Samaria, same pride in the arrogance of heart. The bricks are falling, but will rebuild with cut stones. The sycamores are cut down, but will replace them with cedars. Therefore, Adonai rise up, raising adversities against them and strew them on his enemies, the Arameans from the east and the Philistines from the west. They will devour Israel with an open mouth. For all this is his anger is not turned away, yet his hand is still outstretched. Yet to the people will not turn back to the one who strike them. Now will they seek Adonai Sevaoth. So Adonai will cut off from Israel head and tail, palm branch and bulrush in a single day. The elder and the man of the rank, he's in his in the head, the prophet who teaches falsehood. He is the tail. The leader of the people lead them astray. Those they are misled a swallow up. Therefore, Adonai will have no joy in the young man, or will have a compassion on the orphan and the widows. For everyone is ungodly, an evildoer, and every mouth speaks foolishness. For all his anger is not turned away, yet his hand is outstretched. For the weakness burns like a fire and consumes the briers and the thorns. The kindest the chickens of the forest, for they roll up in a column of smoke. But the wrath of Adonai Sevaoth is in the land burned up. The people are as fuel as for the fire. No one spare his brother. One grabs with the right hand, but is hungry and eats what is left in the hand and is not satisfied. Everyone will eat the flesh from his own arm. Manasseh will divide Ephraim, and Ephraim, Manasseh, both are against Judah. For all this is anger and is not turned away, yet his hand is outstretched.
Rev Andy, you're muted right now.
Owing to those enacting unjust decrees and recording corrupt legislation to deprive the helpless of justice and rob the rights of the poor of my people, so that widows may be their spoil and orphans their prey, what will you do in the day of visitation when desolation comes from afar? To whom will you flee for help? Where will you leave your wealth? One can only crouch among the captives or collapse among the slain. For all this, his anger is not turned away, yet his hand is still outstretched. Assyria the rod. Oi to Assyria, the rod of my anger, the club in their hand is my indignation. I am sending it against an ungodly nation and against the people of my fury. I am commissioning it to take spoil and plunder, to trample them down like mud in the streets. Yet, that is not what Assyria intends, nor is that what he is thinking about. Rather, his heart is to destroy and to cut down nations, only a few, for he says, aren't all my princes kings? Isn't Calno like Carchemish? Isn't Hamath like Arpad? Isn't Samaria like Damascus? As my hand has reached the kingdoms of the idols with more graven images than Jerusalem and Samaria, as I've done to Samaria and her idols, won't I also do to Jerusalem and her idols? Therefore, it will come to pass when Adonai finishes all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the glorying of his haughty eyes. For he said, by the strength of my own hand, I've done it, and my own wisdom, for I am shrewd. I abolished the borders of peoples and plundered their treasures. As a mighty one, I cast down inhabitants. My hand found the riches of the peoples as a nest, like gathering forsaken eggs. I have gathered the entire earth. Not a wing fluttered, not a beak opened or chirped. Should the axe boast against the one who chops with it? Should the saw magnify itself against the one who wields it? It would be like a rod waving the one who lifts it, or like a staff hoisting up the one who is not wood. Therefore, will the Lord Adonai Sevaot send leanness among his fat ones under its glory? He will kindle a burning like a blazing fire. So the light of Israel will become a fire and its Holy One a flame. He will burn and consume its thorns and briars in one day, both the glory of his forest and his fruitful field. He will consume both soul and body. It will be like a sick man wasting away, the remnant of the trees of his forest will be so few a child could record them. A remnant will return. Yet it will come about in that day that the remnant of Israel, those of the house of Jacob who escaped, will never again depend on the one who struck them down, but will depend upon Adonai, the Holy One of Israel, in truth. A remnant will return, even the remnant of Jacob, to the mighty God. For though your people, O Israel, be as the sand of the sea, only a remnant of them will return. Destruction has been decreed. Justice overflows. For a complete destruction, as decreed, will Adonai Elo Sevaot make throughout the whole land. Therefore, thus says Adonai Elohe Sevaot, O my people dwelling in Zion, do not be afraid of Assyria, though he strike you with the war club and lift up his rod against you as Egypt did. For in a very little while, my indignation against you will be spent, and my anger will turn to their destruction. Adonai Sevaot will stir up against him a scourge, as in the slaughter of Midian at the rock of Oreb. As his staff was over the sea, so will he lift it up as he did in Egypt. In that day, his burden will be taken off your shoulders and his yoke off your neck. Indeed, the yoke will be broken because of fatness. Assyria advancing. He has come to Ayath and passed through Migron. At Michmash, he deposited his supplies. They have crossed over the pass. They have taken up lodging at Geba. Ramah is terrified. Gibeoth, Shaul has fled. Shriek your cry, daughter of Galim. Listen, O Laish, O poor Anatoth. Madana has fled. The inhabitants of Gebim take cover. This very day, he will halt at Nob. He shakes his fist at the mountain of the daughter of Zion, the hill of Jerusalem. Behold, the Lord, Adonai Tzevaot, will lop off the branches with terror. So the tall ones will be cut down and the lofty ones laid low. Yes, he will hack down the thickets of the forest with iron, and Lebanon with its majesty will fall.
11. The branch from David. Then a shoot will come forth out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch will bear fruit out of its roots. The Ruach of Adonai will rest upon him, the spirit of wisdom and insight, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and of the fear of Adonai. His delight will be in the fear of Adonai. He will not judge by what his eyes see, nor decide by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he will judge the poor and decide with fairness for the poor of the land. He will strike the land with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Also righteousness will be the belt around his loins, and faithfulness the belt around his waist. Messianic age of Shalom. The wolf will dwell with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the kid. The calf and the young lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow and the bear will graze. Their young ones lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like an ox. A nursing child will play by a cobra's hole, and a weaned child will put his hand into a viper's den. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of Adonai, and the waters cover the sea. Second return from the diaspora. It will also come about in that day that the roots of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will seek for him, and his resting place will be glorious. It will also come about in that day that my Lord will again redeem a second time with his hand the remnant of his people who remain from Assyria, from Egypt, from Pathros, from Cush, Elam, Shinar, Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. He will lift up a banner for the nations and assemble the dispersed of Israel and gather the scattered of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Ephraim's envy will end. Those hostile to Judah will be cut off. Ephraim will not be jealous of Judah, and Judah will not harass Ephraim. They will swoop down on the Philistine slope to the west. Together they will plunder the children of the east, laying their hand on Edom and Moab, the children of Ammon obeying them. Then Adonai will dry up the gulf of the Egyptian sea. He will wave his hand over the river with his scorching wind, and will strike it into seven streams, and then men walk over in sandals. And let men walk over in sandals. So there will be a highway from the remnant of his people who remain from Assyria, as there was for Israel in the day that came up out of the land of Egypt.
Isaiah chapter 5. On that day you will say, I thank you, Adonai, because although you were angry at me, the anger is now turned away, and you are comforting me. See, God is my salvation. I am confident and unafraid. For Yah, Adonai is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. Then you will joyfully draw water from the springs of salvation. On that day, you will say, give thanks to Adonai, call out to his name, make his deeds known among the peoples. Declare how exalted is his name. Sing to Adonai, for he has triumphed. This is being made known throughout the earth. Shout and sing for joy, you who live in Zion, and for the Holy One of Israel is with you in his generation, in his greatness.
Thank you to all who read this evening. It was a wonderful reading. I hope that we were all able to catch all of the little GPS points pointing to who this Emmanuel is. We saw that he is born of a virgin. We saw that a great light will come from Galilee. And then his titles, the Prince of Peace. And we also see that he comes from a root of Jesse, a shoot of Jesse. And lastly, we sing to Adonai because the victory will happen in the in that last day after the vengeance against the nations is poured out. He will come, establish a kingdom that will be a tabernacle that will be glorious on the holy mountain, that it will be raised up in Jerusalem. And we will see, people will begin to sing, behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. For the Lord Adonai is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. So, it was he left for his apostles, he left for all of those who would come in the time of Judea, visual clues to see. And yet we see in the New Testament mockery by some of the scholars saying, where does it say this, the Messiah would come from this place or that place? It's because they were not aware of scriptures. They were not aware of the messages being left in the scriptures for them to see. Now, before we get into questions, I want to point out something very important. I left some scriptures in the back. I also left you a map so that you could see who King, let me see if I can enlarge that, King Ahaz is and what time period it comes and how closely he says that the fall of Israel would happen in a number of years afterwards. So you can see that his prophecy was fulfilled. What many people don't realize is that there was another prophecy of a virgin giving birth, which was also fulfilled in that time period. And then lastly, very important, we always wonder what happened to the kingdom of Assyria. Well, I put on the flyer for you the historical progression, because it's not always clear where these nations go. But Neo-Babylon was defeated by, Neo-Babylon defeated Assyria, which we all know from 2 Kings. What we don't always pay attention to, and what I mentioned in our Bible studies, is that Cyrus comes from the people of Elam and also from the Persians. So in King Cyrus combined the people that would later, or the people that would later become what we would call today modern day Persia, which is Persia today, is Iran. Eventually, the Persians were defeated by the Greeks because they made an incursion into Greece. Alexander responded and defeated the Persians. However, their influence persists to this day. That warrior mentality, those warrior rulers of Iran, are still around. As a matter of fact, they are the primary instrument of constant problems for Israel today. They set up divisions in the north of Israel, in Lebanon. They set up divisions in the west, in Gaza. And they continue to cause problems from Yemen. They are all sponsored by modern-day Iran, who is the descendants of the Persian Empire. So as you can see, what we mentioned in this reading in Isaiah is still taking place today, or shall I say is recreating the problems again today. In those days, in the days of Isaiah, Assyria was used as a weapon to punish the nation of Israel because of their divisions. They had split off and formed a separate kingdom. They even plotted to try and overthrow Judah, as you saw in the first chapter, and they met their fate. This time, the king of Persia, or should I say the prince of Persia, is doing something that's leading perhaps very quickly to the times that we will see, and we know what the end result will be if we continue to study the scriptures. So it looks like time, it looks like time repeats itself, but it doesn't. It's actually just cyclical. It happens again. The same players end up in different locations, and they continue to do the same things that they did before. Okay, so let's go ahead and open up the questions. Then let us go ahead.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead. Go right ahead.
Why was King Ahaz a very wicked king, given the privilege of the prophecy of the coming Messiah? Or
they
the birth of Yeshua.
They first of all, they don't have, they're looking from their own time period. They're looking at their own resources. So they're not fully, like we have the benefit of being able to look backwards and see. But in their time period, any prophecy that threatened their sovereignty is considered a threat. So you saw this with King Herod. You saw this with Pharaoh in Egypt. Any prophecy that mentions that their kingdom is going to fall, that their government is going to be wiped out, is considered a threat. So from that point on, they're not looking to the far future. They're not looking at that at all. They're looking at the present day. How are you affecting my money and my resources right now? And that's really what the kings in Israel and Judah were focused on. Only what the wealth that they had right then. And by the way, I'll say this again. Solomon and David had accumulated a massive amount of wealth. So what the kings inherited in both Israel and Judah was an enormous amount of wealth. It was so great that the kings far to the east in Babylon wanted to come and take a look at it. They wanted to come and see all this wealth that had been accumulated. And as you saw, the king, the queen of Sheba didn't believe how wealthy everyone was in Israel. So she came up to see. People came from all over the world, for the most part, to see this great accumulation of wealth that had been collected by both King David and King Solomon. So everybody wanted the peace of Israel and Judah. They had amassed a great deal of wealth. And those kings who were at that time did not want to give up anything. Okay, I hope that answers your question. But
I have another question too.
Yes.
So I'm really looking at what you're saying, that Emmanuel was fulfilled in 721 BCE, because I was always told that it was Yeshua that was prophesied here when a virgin will conceive, but you're saying it was actually fulfilled in 721 BCE.
A double-edged prophecy. Remember I said prophecies sometimes have a local fulfillment or like the immediate fulfillment, and then they also have a longer-term fulfillment? That's what you're looking at. It was fulfilled in part in that time period when the prophetess gave birth to a child. And then shortly after that, they ended up in fighting in Syria, conquering the land and taking the kingdoms. And then, but that was that event was a forerunner of the one that was to take place centuries later in Judea. Is that understood? It's many prophecies have a almost immediate fulfillment, and then there's a long-term fulfillment. So that one has a dual fulfillment.
So it does refer to Yeshua.
It definitely points toward Yeshua, yes. But I want it's important that we keep in our minds and our understanding that until Yeshua is born, it's not Yeshua. It's what Paul or what John calls the Word. It is the power, it is the presence, the face, the Spirit of God moving, walking, interacting, and that Spirit becomes later, centuries later, Yeshua. So when you hear people say that Jesus is in the Old Covenant, that's incorrect. It is not Jesus who's in the Old Covenant. He hasn't been born yet.
Really? So who was born 2,000 years ago is not, and that's really strange.
That is the word. The word became flesh.
Oh, that's right.
He became flesh. He tabernacled with us. He became Yeshua. Mm. And his name was given at that time as Yeshua. But it was also indicated that he was going to represent, fulfill the scripture of Emmanuel, God with us. As a matter of fact, one of his titles, let me go back to that section. I believe it's in Isaiah 9, verse 5. For to us a child is born, a son will be given to us, and the government will be upon his shoulders. Yeshua did not receive the government yet. He is going to receive. As a matter of fact, I shouldn't say that. He received it just before he ascended into heaven, when he told his disciples that all the government of heaven and earth was given to him at that time, exactly as Daniel said would happen. All right, so the government will be upon his shoulder. So it has been placed upon him, but he is not acting as yet. His name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God. And my favorite is that word that you see, my Father of Eternity, in Hebrew is Aviad. He becomes the Father. He becomes a Father, not the Father, a Father of all who go into eternity. Aviad. Avi is father, and Ad is, that's in Hebrew. You'd have to have the Hebrew script.
Where does it say that?
That is Isaiah 9, chapter 5.
Can you go to Isaiah 9, this book?
Right. Now, if you have the Hebrew and you look at Isaiah 9, 5, you will see the word, the term, Aviad. Avi is my father, and it's usually given, by the way, my father, or Avi, is usually given to a son. The father is Av.
Right.
But the son, sometimes that first son is called Avi. They call him Avi. Mm. He's pointing back toward the father. So he is Avi Ad, the son of the father of eternity. It's a wonderful title. And Hebrew has so much beauty in it. It's so simplistic, so easy, and so expansive at the same time. Aviad, Prince of Peace. And when we say peace, what are we talking about? Are we talking about the end of war? No, we're talking about the end of division between God and man. He is the bridge of peace between God and man. The bridge of peace.
So this government that he is to lead, that will, it's pointing toward a future government?
It's actually, he has it right now. He has the keys of life and death right now. While he's in the heavens, which is, by the way, he said, even though you die, you'll still live. Because he has the keys of life and death. Nobody dies and goes away forever. He has control of that process. All death has been, and that's why one of the scriptures says, oh, death, where is your sting? Because it no longer has the power to keep people the way it used to. Once he passed away and he picked up his life, as he said, God gave him, the Father gave him the power to pick up his own life. Once he picked up his life, got up out of the tomb, folded the cloth on his face, and walked outside of that rock, walked through that wall, he became the king of death. So all death, all who have died are now in his domain. He has control over all who pass away. No one is lost anymore.
But He's always existed, but it does say a child is born, but it's a finite place and time that he was born, it says.
There is a finite place and time when Yeshua was born, yes. But he's more. You have to understand he's much more than just the man. He's much more than just a man.
But you're saying that you're not saying time 2,000 years ago. You are saying that with this particular passage?
Okay, let me make sure I understand what you're asking. Say it again.
So ask 2,000 the question years again. Ago, when supposedly, she, I mean, not supposedly, but I mean, she was born in a manger, that's what they're referring to here, correct?
Yeshua was born in a manger. Okay. It was more like a stall where the animals were stored at night. It was kind of a stone enclosure where the animals were stored at night to keep them from the weather. So, all right. So he was born there. Yeshua. Yes. Yeshua was born then. You could say he was conceived before that, but he was born at that time. Yes. And that child, the government of heaven and earth was put upon his shoulders, but he had to, how can I say it? It wasn't just given to him because of birth, the way we do with kings right now. A king has a son, and it's expected the government is going to be put on him. It didn't happen quite like that. It was put upon him when he completed the work that the Father gave him to do. And so he told his disciples just before he ascended into heaven. Yes, Acts 1. Now, they asked him, his disciples asked him about the kingdom in Acts 1.
No way.
They asked him, Lord, are you restoring the kingdom to Israel at this time? He said to them, Yeshua said to them, it is not your place to know the times or seasons which the Father has placed under his control. Do you understand? So he has not acted because the Father has said it's not time yet. When he says it's time, which you'll read about in Revelation, you'll see that's when he acts for the first time. All right. Let me see. That may not be it either. I think it may be in Matthew, at the end of Matthew, where he says that the kingdom, okay, at the end of one of the Gospels, and I believe it's Matthew, he says, all power and authority in heaven and earth has been placed upon him, upon Yeshua. So, but he cannot take the earth until the Father says it's time to establish his kingdom on the earth. Is that, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Authority is put on him. It's his, but he cannot take it until the Father says it's time. And then when he comes with the full force of the kingdom of heaven. And all of those resurrected that he has collected through all the ages, they return with him, his feet touch the earth, and the rest come with him.
That's his return.
At his return. But all power and authority is put on him right now. Right now. But he cannot take the kingdom, this particular kingdom. He can't take the kingdom of earth until the Father says it's time. And we see that happen in Revelation. He says it's time. And then the whole thing starts unraveling.
It's in Matthew 28:18, Rabbi Emanuel.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thank you.
Uh-huh. 28:18.
Let me go there. There is Matthew 28:18. Okay.
18 and 19.
Now the 11 disciples, and starting in verse 16, now the 11 disciples went to the Galilee, to the mountain Yeshua had designated. When they saw him, they worshiped, but some wavered. And Yeshua came up to them and spoke to them, saying, all authority in heaven and on the earth has been given to me. He has authority over everything on earth, including death. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. However, as he also said, it is not for any of us to know the times when the Father says, now's the time, now act. That is reserved only for the Father. And if you were with me from the very beginning, you'll see that the reason why is because he is not the Father. He came from the Father to do the work that the Father sent him to do. He has the face, the reflection of the Father. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. He has the reflection, the reflective authority of the Father. He is the tabernacle of the Spirit. But he is not the Father. There's only one God, and that God is giving power and authority to his Son.
So he's not God.
He I wouldn't say God. That. He is God, but he is not the Father. Do you understand what I mean? But the Father.
Idea that three what, is one and one is three? Is
no, not, nothing like that. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. There is one Father, one God, one Father. The Father has expressed himself into remember that I gave you the example of the mirror? When you go and you look in the mirror, is that person on the other side of the glass you? It imitates everything you do in the exact opposite. It imitates everything you do in the exact opposite. But it's not you. But it's your face.
So you say the Son is the Father in that way?
In a spiritual way, he is the reflection of the Father.
Express image, Baba says.
Image can also mean like a reflection image. He will do what the Father tells him to do. He said that I am not. He said the Father is greater than I. He made it clear that the Father is greater than I. Is he in the family of God? Yes. Yes. Because God is making a family. That's exactly what he's doing, is making a family. Right now, there's one Son and many others who will be joining the Son. And that's by the choice of the Son. He said that he was unwilling to take all of that until all of his brothers and sisters had been sealed with him. One God only, one God.
Amen. That you're so adamant and clear, more so ever.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Just so adamant and clear. And very there's good. No doubt in you. And I appreciate it.
It's not three in one. It's not a spirit that's independent of and able to say to God, no, I don't want to do what you want to do. It's not three gods. There's one God. One God only. One God only. One. There are not three. There never were three. I know that is that comes from paganism, and it was an attempt to bring in pagans, people from the East who believed in multiple gods, and some from the West who also believed in multiple gods.
I think in Ephesians it says he thought it not to be equal with God.
Right, he isn't. Mm-hmm. Is your reflection equal to you? Can it do what you do? It imitates you, but it has no power over you. It does not. It is not equal to you. You can't walk away and then your mirror pulls you back and says, hey, come back here. It's not possible. Okay. I don't want to get too deep into that because it does cause our minds, because our minds are limited. We're humans. We have a very limited perception, both of time and space and spirit. Those things are deeper than we are able to understand at this time. We have to get the fundamentals down first. And then when he reveals all of these things to us, it'll be easier to understand. Like he calls the heavens water. We can't, that's, you know, pass right over our heads. Doesn't quite, we can't get it. We don't understand that we breathe water. He separated the water from below and separated the water above. He made an expanse in between. But it is, we can't leave this. We can't go out in space and hope to breathe. There are many things that are deeper than we are able to understand at this time because we are limited, and it was intentional. He never intended to make us into gods. Not right now. No way. No way. Can you imagine a child thinking he's greater than his father? Although there are some who think that, but they're sadly confused.
Thank you for joining us as we explore the complexity and poetry of the book of Isaiah. Join us each week as we continue to examine the writings of the prophet Yeshayahu, bringing his words into our modern viewpoint.